What principles should we use when neither the rules of right nor the rules of wrong seem to apply? There is an interesting area between right and wrong. I think normally we refer to it as a gray area. The first time I heard it called a fringed area was a very interesting experience to me. I was holding a series in the church, one meeting each evening. And on this particular evening, I distinctly recall talking about God's dealings with us. Not how we deal with each other, or even how we deal with Him, but how He deals with us. The reason I point this out is that I'm quite positive on that night that I made no reference at all to tithes or offerings. The next evening, I was looking at some notes prior to the meeting when a man came up and said, I just gave the treasurer a check for $2,600 in tithe. And then he stood there expectantly like he wanted me to say something. Well, I didn't know what to say. So, was I supposed to be overly impressed with the fact that there was $2,600 involved? That would be a little difficult for me because I recall that Jesus one time said about the gift of the poor widow that she had given more than they all, and it was only a couple of small coins. So I must not have looked very enthusiastic, because pretty soon he said, "Aren't you curious?" I said, "Well, I suppose I am." I really wasn't, because I thought, well, he must have had a fair income, and this was the tithe. And then he related this incident. He said, last night you were talking about God's dealings with us. And when my wife and I returned home, we put another log in the fire, and we sat there discussing the subject of the evening and started to recall how God had done specific things for us. I remembered an incident, he said, in which we were right up against the wall, so to speak. Didn't know which way to turn, and it just seemed like God opened a door for us to go through. It was just a miracle. We'd rather forgotten that incident, and my wife and I sat there thrilling again as we thought about it. And then he said she remembered another, and then I remembered one, then she remembered one, then I remembered one. He said, I was amazed how many times that God had really worked miracles for us in His dealings with us, and really we had forgotten. Of course, this is the common practice of through the ages, that people tend to forget. The Israelites, we like to think, had very short memories. They could just come out of Egypt and see the fantastic manifestation of God's power in the plagues, etc. And now He has led them out with a mighty hand, and they face a river on one, a lake, what is it, sea, wasn't it? A sea on one side and a mountain on the other, and here comes Pharaoh's cavalry behind them, and immediately they start to complain. Then He takes them across the Red Sea between two great walls of water, and as quick as they get across there, they start moaning because there isn't any water. And one time they had too much, and it's only just a little while later they don't have any. Well, now, if He could put this water up in great walls, couldn't He find a little water for them somewhere? Well, of course He did. Came out of the rock, as you recall. But they were forever forgetting. Always forgetting. Elder Dedimore has an interesting sermon on the cucumbers. I enjoy listening to him because he says that, isn't it amazing that every time the Israelites got into trouble, they were always remembering the cucumbers, referring back to when they were living in Egypt. But we tend to forget, too. And this man said, I had forgotten how many there were. When I retired, he went on, I did not go to sleep immediately. I lay there thinking that in God's dealings with me, there were never any fringe areas. And then he went on to explain, because I was curious now, fringe area. Gray area, yes, I'd heard that, but not fringe. He said, I run a very complex business, businesses within businesses, etc. And many times it's very difficult for me to determine what is or is not a profit. Oh, there are depreciation schedules and long-term gains and short-term gains and all kinds of things involved in it. And sometimes it is difficult to tell what is or is not a profit. I call these fringe areas, he said. So tonight, he said, I gave the treasurer a check for $2,600 in tithe on fringe areas. I don't know whether I owe it or not, and I don't care. I just don't want to have any fringe areas between me and God. It was a most profound decision. And I just thank God for allowing this man to share this with me. He realized that there were no fringe areas between God and him, but he didn't want any fringe areas between him and God, so he just wouldn't take a chance. He didn't know and didn't care whether he owed it or not. It was that simple. Now, the devil has a real trap in this fringe area, which we must turn our attention to, and that is this, that he tries to get folks to walk this tightrope between right and wrong. Because he knows that if we walk this tightrope long enough, human nature will inevitably and eventually cause us to fall off. On which side will we always fall? Do you have an idea? Which side?
Probably the wrong side.
Always on the wrong side. When we walk the fringe area between right and wrong, that tightrope, we inevitably fall on the wrong side. But now, isn't this strange? Because it has been found by scientific experiment that if a person walks on the rail of a railroad track, that if he is right-handed, he will fall on the right-hand side oftener than on the left-hand side. If he is left-handed, he will fall on the left-hand side. That is, he'll lose his balance and go off that side of the rail. But in the Christian experience, it doesn't work right hand and left hand. It's always the wrong side. There's something we need to remember. I'm quoting from Great Controversy, page 11. Satan's deceptions will be more subtle and his assaults more determined. If it were possible, he would lead astray the very elect. Also from the book Selected Messages, Volume 1, page 142. Whenever and wherever the Lord works in giving a genuine blessing, a counterfeit is also revealed. So here is the area close to the right will always be the wrong. So Satan will create a fringe area. Well, someone may say, well, what do you mean by fringe or gray area? Well, it can apply so many places. We can have fringe areas in dress. We could have fringe areas in diet, in amusement. There are many areas where one person may say, no, it's wrong. Another person says, what? Why? Many times youth say, what's wrong with it? And it's very difficult to point to a rule, a commandment, or a principle, or anything that says, this is it. This is the cutoff point. And that's why we call them gray areas. They're not exactly white. They're not exactly black. They're a combination of the two or a fringe area. Let us look at some of the dangerous spots where the devil has fringe areas. I suppose this has happened a lot, but today we seem to have mimeograph sheets scattered all over and cassettes and people giving lectures. And I would dare say that most of the material in these is true. Most of it is true. But the most dangerous error is that which lies closest to truth. From Volume 8, Testimonies to the Church, page 290 and 291. The path of error often appears to lie close to the path of truth. How do you know that the mimeograph sheet is true? How do you know the cassette is okay, or that the lecturer is telling you the truth? It goes on to say, but the mind enlightened by the Holy Spirit may discern that it is diverging from the right way. After a while, the two will seem to be widely separated, which reminds me of a time I had some directions, but I came to a road which forked so imperceptibly that I didn't know which one I should take. Now, after I'd traveled only a few hundred feet, I could have probably, within a dozen or two steps, gone from one road back to the other. But eventually, I noticed there was a mountain in front of me, and one road went on one side and one went on the other, and they were miles apart. It became very apparent that I was on the wrong road. And there was no way, no easy way to cut across. I had to go back to the starting point. In other words, the true point, there is no halfway. It's either right or it is wrong. I recall a number of years ago, I came to the West Coast from the East on an assignment, and I met a number of my friends, people I had lived among and gone to church with. And they were all excited about a large reel of tape, which they had, one of the big 7-inch reels. And they, as quick as they saw me, they wanted me to tell them the details of the material which was on this tape, because there were some fantastic things on this tape which had happened all within 100 miles of where I was living on the East Coast. And so they gave me some details, and I said, I don't even know what you're talking about. Oh, you must, they said. So I sat and listened to the tape. I never even heard of this stuff. I'd never even heard of the man. So I replayed the tape and took some careful notes, and when I returned east, I did some investigating. I found out there was such a man. But I found out that the material which he had placed upon this large tape was totally erroneous, based on his own imagination, or why he went to all the trouble to make it, or how it was circulated. I haven't any idea. But I had to write back and tell the people, you just as well use the tape for something more profitable, because there isn't a word of truth in it. And still these people were gathering in people's houses to listen to this thing. Now remember, we have to have the mind enlightened by the Holy Spirit, or we will be caught up. We'll fall on the wrong side, because this is a fringe area. I think that there is a principle that we can apply to all such material. There are people who appear to be real honest, and I'm sure many of them are. Honest, but possibly misguided. But there is a principle that you can always apply. It comes from Early Writings, page 56. Jesus would breathe upon them the Holy Ghost. In that breath was light, power, and much love, joy, and peace. Now notice, light, power, much love, joy, and peace. Then it says, Satan would then breathe upon them an unholy influence. In it there was light and much power, but no sweet love, joy, and peace. And inevitably, people who propagate error are an unhappy people. I've known them personally. From carefree Christians, full of faith, now they become bitter. They can't find a church they want to go to because no one wants to listen to light. Their own friends turn away from them because they just constantly pressured them to hear the light. Just remember, when they become bitter, when they become sour, when there isn't love, joy, and peace, you know the Lord isn't leading, because when Jesus breathes upon them, they have this. There's another fringe area, books. It is so common today to find books, the spectacular type of book. A person who has led a very wicked life, a sordid life, and then he has been led to Jesus Christ, and it seems that he wants to tell his story, or people want him to tell his story or write it in a book. Very spectacular reading. And they are circulated by the thousands, and people read these. And they say, well, it has a good moral. Just think. What is the principle? Messages to Young People, page 284. Books that delineate the satanic practices of human beings are giving publicity to evil. Books that delineate the satanic practices of human beings are giving publicity to evil. These horrid particulars need not be lived over. And no one who believes the truth for this time should act a part in perpetuating the memory of them. Simply thank God that the man has given his heart to Christ and take off from there, but don't delve back into the past. The widespread use of such books at this time is one of the cunning devices of Satan for ministry of healing, page 447. Notice, one of his cunning devices is to use this, and he doesn't care how much good is in it, as long as he gets the evil in it too. How careful we have to be. And so many times we think, as long as we're not reading novels. And we're told in another spot that even though the author may weave religious sentiments all the way through, this only serves as a cloak to hide the folly that's underneath. Think of music as a fringe area. Satan has no objection to music if he can make that a channel through which to gain access to the minds of the youth. And still many times I fear that we have allowed the disco to move into the church. I had an appointment downstate one time. I stayed at a motel. I opened the window because I like fresh air at night, and there was a disco down the street. It was too late for me to change motels. Fortunately, I have a good sleeper, so I just went to sleep. But before I went to sleep, I heard the beat of the music. I heard the singing. I couldn't hear the words, fortunately, but I could hear the beat. The next day, I was sitting in Sabbath school, and from the youth chapel, I heard the identical beat and the identical sound of singing. I couldn't hear the words in either place. And if I had a tape, if I had a cassette that I could play for you right now, and I would play the one that I heard from the disco and the one that I heard in the church, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. They were identical. The type of singing was the same. And I'm afraid that the devil has inspired people to take music from objectionable sources and then put religious words. And as long as we see the name of Jesus in it and so forth, then it becomes all right. But does it? It is a fringe area. Notice he has no objection to music if he can make that a channel through which to gain access to the minds of the youth. And I might say to the elder people too. Because at camp meeting, I've seen the good old folks sitting down in those easier chairs down in the front, sitting there tapping their feet and tapping the arms of their chairs because of some of the music which has been used. Messages to Young People, 295. When turned to good account, music is a blessing, but it is often made one of Satan's most attractive agencies to ensnare souls. One of the most attractive. How about amusements? We need to understand in amusement that there is a difference between amusement or sport and recreation. There is certainly nothing wrong with recreation. As a matter of fact, it is essential to a well-balanced life, to the mental health, physical health. But we need to realize that recreation is a form of relaxation which will impart fresh vigor. And it usually follows a period of toil. while sport is amusement for its own sake. I believe that the statement is true, that sport tends to tear down, recreation to build up. I think that's a safe principle. This was brought to my mind recently when I was riding along listening to the radio, and in the newscast was the sports editor. And he was interviewing a man from the National Basketball Association who said that the reason why they weren't playing very well for the last series which they had was that they were worn out. And he made this statement. Do you know, he said, that I have played 22 minutes a night for the last three nights? And I thought to myself, 22 minutes out of 24 hours and he's worn out? What would he have done back in the old days when he pitched hay for 11 and a half hours? Or 12 or 13 like some of the farmers did. 22 minutes and he was worn out. The greatest recreation we can have, of course, is communing with nature, changing our occupation to something else. If we've been studying, move to work. If we've been working, move back to study. There are all kinds of ways, and there's certainly nothing wrong with having an innocent ball game at a picnic. But when we get recreation for recreation's, I mean, we get sport for amusement itself, then it ceases to become recreation, it ceases to rebuild the body. It seems to be strange that in a time when the educators of the world are decrying the fact that youth are coming out of the schools without a common basis of even the common branches. As a matter of fact, just this morning, I heard an educator say that of the junior high school and the senior high school students in a fairly large city, that only 10% even had basic writing skills. Now, I'm talking about eighth grade. I'm talking about high school. 10%. And they hope to upgrade this. But do they know why these are not coming out? Because the big emphasis in all schools has been and is at the present time in sports, organized sports. Notice this, from Adventist Home, page 522, talking about youth. They lose both the desire and the capacity for a life of usefulness. Their religious aspirations are chilled and their spiritual life is darkened. Why? In the next page, 523. Satan has been making special efforts to lead them to find happiness in worldly amusements and to justify themselves by endeavoring to show these amusements are harmless, innocent, and even important to health. Their passion for amusement is developed to such an extent that it is impossible for them to obtain a knowledge of even the common branches of education. Their passion for amusement is developed to such an extent that it is impossible for them to attain a knowledge of even the common branches of education. And as the love of pleasure predominates, their intellectual advancement is slow. And there you have it. It is an excellent point, isn't it? Because it actually tells what it's all about. As Christians, we have to be extremely careful of this fringe area. I was having a week of prayer in a school one time, and a little girl, we were talking about this subject of fringe areas and the problems we have in it, and a little girl came up with an idea that that she thought was wrong, that they played cards, and I said, what kind of cards, honey? And she said, rook. And I said, where do they play that? She said, in my house. I thought that that rook was a dead issue. We played it when I was a youngster growing up. It wasn't until I graduated from college that I found that rook and the old game of 500, which was a card game played in granges back and forth across the United States, are the identical game. The devil knew he couldn't get regular pasteboard cards in, you know, the regular pasteboards into our homes. And so what did he do? He simply changed it. He had 14 cards in each suit, four suits. He just changed and had them colors instead of having diamonds and aces, and I mean diamonds and clubs and hearts, etc. That's all. But isn't it amazing that in order to get this game, which is an exact copy of a game played with regular cards, in order to get into Adventist homes, he called it Rook. Isn't it amazing? Because Rook means to cheat or defraud. And here we're right back to the beginning. When the devil tempted Adam and Eve, it was through deceit. What's the principle involved? Messages to Young People, page 380. Expertness in the handling of cards often leads to a desire to put this knowledge and tact to some use for personal benefit. How many has this pernicious amusement led to every sinful practice, to poverty, to prison, and to murder in the gallows? Expertness in the handling of cards. This was brought forcibly to my mind one evening when, at the close of a meeting, there were a group of young people, about 10 or 12, I would say, had waited for me outside in the foyer of the church. And they said, we think you're a little bit radical on this idea of amusement, really. And I said, well, I try not to be. And they said, I suppose you'd be against Bible card games. Well, I said, I don't know. Never really thought about it. Why, do you play them? And the man said, yes. And I said, when? He said, well, quite often on Sabbath afternoon. And I suddenly thought, I said, why do you play? So that you can learn texts better and Bible verses? And I admire him. He turned to another man and he said, we'll have to be honest. Then he turned to me and said, we play to win. Bible card games on Sabbath afternoon, we play to win? While they were talking, a man waiting just off to one side came over and said, could I say something? And so I said, sure. He said, please don't stop talking about this. Please don't stop warning people. For 20 years, I carried a man's soul on my conscience. For 20 years. I had a roommate in college. I taught him to play Rook. He loved to play. He just took to it like a duck to water. He was forever shuffling and dealing and shuffling and dealing and learning card tricks, all kinds of things. He had a deck in his hands all the time. He said he did not finish his formal education. He left and became a professional gambler. I had taught him to play Rook. He said, I was deathly afraid that in the life he was leading, he'd be killed or die or something, and his soul was on me. So one time I spent my own money. I flew to Las Vegas. I found him at a casino. He came up to my hotel after he was off shift, and he was happy to see me, and we sat and talked because we had been close friends in school. And finally he said, I sat there and pled with him to give up this life and give his heart back to Jesus Christ. And he said, he walked over to me, put his arm around my shoulder and said, hey, buddy, you taught me, remember? I said, I remembered. And I'm not even going to attempt to describe my feeling as I made my way back to the airport and flew home that next day. I had this terrible sense of guilt that I was responsible for this man. Until last year, he gave up this life, he gave his heart back to Christ, and for the first time in 20 years, I can relax. The servant of God simply said, expertness in the handling of cards, and that came from Messages to Young People, 380. Just expertness in the handling. We need to also remember that Messages to Young People, page 399, says that that which was considered harmless at home will not long be regarded as dangerous abroad. And just a week ago, a young woman came and said, I came from a Christian college and we got into Rook. And she said, we played Rook all the time whenever we could steal a moment. We even played it in chapel. And she said, finally, we got rid of those cards and got the regular ones. She said, in the nick of time, some of us woke up to what was happening. Oh, the devil has a fringe area there, believe me. What do we do about fringe areas? Let me tell you a story. There was a high-ranking government official who required the services of a chauffeur. And so they advertised. There were a number of applicants. They had to have a chauffeur's license and, of course, had to be highly skilled. Well, they went through a period of examination, and finally they limited the finalists down to three. And they took them out to a place for a final driving test. They had a little strip of road that ran right along the edge of a cliff. It was curved. And so they said to the first man, let's see you drive a car along the edge of that cliff. And he followed very skillfully the edge of the cliff, 12 inches away. Straightaways and curves. Brought the car back, parked it. Said to the next man, what can you do? He put it within 6 inches. He drove inside the other man's wheel tracks, that close to the edge. Came back and parked the car. And finally, the third man got into the car and they said, let's see what you could do. He drove just as close to the left-hand side of the road along the cliff as he possibly could and just as far away from the edge, and they hired him for the position. Which simply brings us to the great principle involved in fringe areas, and that is this. That the only safety in fringe areas is to move out of the fringe area to the side of unquestionable right. As long as you stay in the gray or the fringe area, you're on the devil's territory. You're on dangerous ground. The principle is simply recorded like this. Do not see how close you can walk upon the brink of a precipice and be safe. Comes from the book Mind, Character, and Personality, page 237. The only safe course is to take yourself out of the fringe area, move to the side of unquestionable right. Volume 5, Testimonies to the Church, page 106. Satan is a sharp and persevering workman. He knows just how to entrap the unwary. And it is an alarming fact that few succeed in escaping from his wiles. They see no danger and do not guard against his devices. Simply always remember that between the rules of right and the rules of wrong, there is a tight wire. Satan would have every person walk on this tightrope because he knows that human nature will inevitably cause them to fall. They'll always fall on the wrong side. He knows that. So the only way we can be safe is to move to the side of unquestionable right.